All right, so last week, we explored this relationship between birth, death, and dependent origination. And really, it points toward how we have such a strong attachment, a strong investment in our states of being, in being who we take ourselves to be moment by moment, the states of being both in our whole lifetime and also just the roles that we take up as a parent, as a teacher, as a husband or wife, a spouse, a partner, employee, supervisor. There's these countless roles that we take up during our lives. And each one of those roles will have some ending. They have some passing. And this is one of the teachings of dependent origination, that all things which are conditioned arise and pass away. So we have this strong attachment to these states of birth. To our roles, to our sense of I, of me and mine, both the pleasurable ones and the painful ones. Sometimes we may think, why would I have the painful ones? But there's still that attachment. There's still that hunger to be it. Because if there wasn't some benefit, something we got out of it, why would we keep doing that? And this is really talking about tanha, the hunger to be. One of the links, the earlier links in this dependent origination. And we notice this when the sense of self, the sense of I or me or mine starts to soften or fade away or even falling away. Often a fear arises, a sense of groundlessness, the sense of what I base my foundation of my life on isn't so solid or isn't even there. And then what happens from that? And after that fear passes, there can be a profound joy, a profound peace and ease. So that hunger to be, to become, and that attachment adds fuel to our ignorance, fuel to our misunderstanding, our blindness of not seeing how things actually are. And this is what is the fuel, the basic fuel, the fundamental fuel that keeps dependent origination cycling, keeps the sense of self cycling, the selfing, keeps the quality of suffering arising. This is the first and second noble truths. And so last week, we looked at using the power of death as a spiritual practice to start to see through that hunger, to start to bring the energy enough, high enough energy to start to see through that hunger. It's like some of the mornings in Seattle or the Seattle area when you wake up and the fog is just heavy on the ground and you can't see more than a few houses in front of you. And then eventually the sun starts to burn through, right? That's the power of death as a spiritual practice when it's used well, not in a way that overwhelms us, not in a way that makes us frightened, but actually brings that quality of urgency. It serves as a wake-up call. To see what is truly important, what is actually important in this life. And it also reminds us of the impermanence of all conditioned things, including ourselves, including this mind state and this sense of identity that I may be defending against or hoping to leave. And sometimes life provides that. Provides that wake-up call. It gives you that opportunity to use death as a spiritual practice. Sometimes it's in the form of a diagnosis, and sometimes it's in the form of a brush with death, or maybe the fear of a terminal diagnosis, a fatal diagnosis. And I shared how having a skin biopsy. He brought up that fear and that urgency and playing with that, working with that to say, okay, what is this life going to be about? If this life is limited, if this my own life is finite, which it is, but I forget that fact as so many of us do. And when you drop that into your life, it's like, I always like that image of the childhood cartoon watching with, the Wile E. Coyote running off the cliff and skidding across the open air before he realizes he's left the ground. And that's that momentum of our life keeps going. And then suddenly we realize, Oh, what I've assumed to be true to continue my life is not so solid. I deeply appreciate Naomi Shihab Nye's beautiful poem, Kindness. And just to quote the beginning of it, before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. Feel the future dissolve in a moment like salt in a weakened broth. What you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved. All this must go so you know how desolate the landscape can be between the regions of kindness. And I think we maybe all have experienced these moments of the future dissolving in a moment, like salt in a weakened broth. You know, we held in our hands, we carefully counted and carefully saved the plans, the hopes, you know, the anticipation of the future, the anticipation of a relationship or a loved one. We're thinking back to this year with COVID and how many things dissolved because of COVID. All these things that we maybe carefully hoped for, that we built our plans around, vanishes by this one disease that's gripping the world, of course. And so the question is, when this happens, the spiritual question is, how do I respond? And how do I respond? And someone who's interested in making their life one of a spiritual inquiry and growth and discovery pays attention to these times, not just fighting with them and trying to negotiate as we often do, but actually turn toward it as an opportunity to see, well, what is this mind, this heart, this life truly about? To notice where we turned toward, open to our mortality. Or where do we contract against it? Where do we fight against that? Do we turn with wisdom, compassion, seeking to understand, to see where have I been deluded? Where has my blindness made me see life in a different way? And or do I turn with resistance, with contraction, with ignorance, pushing away, fighting, denying? Now, this is magnified. It's really easier to see in these kind of big things, these big deaths, like this death of this whole life. As I worked with when I had that you know, possible biopsy or that biopsy and the fear of the diagnosis, which was benign. It was just a slightly abnormal mold, nothing to worry about. But not in that week of not knowing, it brought this up, it brought that energy. And that energy is like the sun burning through the fog. Allows us to see more clearly because there's so much inertia. Dependent origination has this immense inertia and process and mechanism that keeps our selfing going and therefore keeps our suffering going again and again. So we can see it almost by zooming back and seeing these big moments of, will I live? Will I die? But also it allows us to go into this moment, this very moment of how is this same process playing out? It's operating in a very much more smaller scale and the stakes are much smaller from moment to moment. You know, when we're running late and there's more delays, that sense of self, that urgency of wanting things to be a certain way. Well, we expected this evening to go, this night to go, or this day to go, and it doesn't go that way. Those are all births and deaths, disappointments, frustrations, all chances to practice, all ways of practicing in the same way we might practice holding a potentially fatal diagnosis, but with much, you know, it's much more toned down and easy to overlook. So to borrow the phrase from Carlos Castaneda, the death is an advisor. You have to be aware of the uselessness of your self-importance and of your personal history. Your death can give you a little warning. It always comes as a chill. Death is our eternal companion. It is always to our left at arm's length How can anyone feel so important when we know that death is stalking us? The thing to know is when you're impatient is to turn to your left and ask advice from your death. An immense amount of pettiness is dropped if your death makes a gesture to you, or if you catch a glimpse of it, or if you just have a feeling that your companion is there watching you. The issue of our death is never pressed far enough. Death is the only wise advisor that we have. So death's brushes with death can be gifts. In fact, it's one of the most profound gifts, is to, because it reminds us of what's truly important. What's truly important beyond all the possessions, all the roles, all the accolades, all the blame, all the losses. What is actually important that transcends all that? This is really what our heart of our practice tries to discover, to actually see for ourselves. When life becomes limited and not forever, and when we release time and our place in time, then we can fully enter the moment, fully enter what is here. And this way, going into what is in the timeless, what is beyond time. But the paradox is there's something we have to release. We have to release this self-identity, which is so tied to time and things going from this moment to the next. So seeing what keeps us from fully living, what keeps us from fully engaged in how this mystery and the wonder of the world is constantly arising and showing ourselves, showing us what is the mystery of life. To quote another beautiful poet, Mary Oliver, from When Death Comes, just the beginning or middle of that. When it's over, I want to say all my life I was a bride married to amazement. I was the bridegroom taking the world into my arms. When it's over, I don't want to wonder if I've made of my life something particular and real. I don't want to find myself sighing and frightened or full of argument. I don't want to end up simply having visited this world. And for each of us, what does this mean to be a bride married to amazement, to be the bridegroom taking the world in our arms? It's not something that anyone can tell you what that looks like, how that looks for you. It's something that it's one of our, I don't know, one of our, I almost want to say sacred duties, is to discover that for ourselves. What does it mean to fully live, to be a bride married to amazement, to be the bridegroom taking the world into our arms, to not end up simply having only visited this world? It's that message of fully living and realizing in that full living, there's the full release as that passes. We start to drop this idea. It's a paradox. When we really take on death as a spiritual creature, we start to realize that there's actually something beyond life and death. I'm not talking about an afterlife or heaven or hell. I'm talking about right in this very moment. In this very moment, there is something that's beyond the process of birthing and deathing, beyond dependent origination. Something that's not conditioned, that's not created by conditions. Something that the Buddha called the deathless. This is the mystery. This is what holds, it's like the space, the stillness that holds all, that things arise out of and pass back into. And so to help to explore this, I'm going to do in a few minutes here, do a dyad exercise. Before people jump off, let me explain it a little bit, because that's still part of the teaching around it, even if you choose not to participate. Because this whole process of what's being birthed and what's dying, we support not to make an intellectual process, not something that's a philosophy that we explore from that, our minds exploring something that's outside of ourselves. What's important is to bring it right in this very moment. How is this manifesting? How is this revealing itself right now in our experience? Because it's available. It's constantly showing itself and passing away. You know, if we're having thoughts, if we're having a sense of, you know, reactions or wanting or not wanting, we're very likely to be in a state of birth. Often we're just not conscious to it. Our mind just is relaxing. It's kind of churning through a fantasy or a worry. And we don't even realize in the backdrop, we've taken birth. We're taking shape into something. We often don't notice when that falls away because the next one is coming right over it, like one wave being washed over by another wave. So to start to learn to see that, we'll use this process of the dyad. And it does take a lot of interest and, let's say, spiritual energy, spiritual focus. And that's one of the benefits of the dyad, that your partner lends that to you by keeping asking you those questions to remind you of that. Because what we're asking us to do is, it's a bit like asking a fish to notice, what is water? What is this very medium that we swim in constantly without any distinction of this or that? It's like it's constantly the very medium that we swim in. Right? And that's the sense of self, the sense of I. It's just this background assumption that's always there. So to step back, we have to be willing to release the content, release the story enough to notice that there's someone who's having a story. Could be something like, I don't like this. This is confusing. I don't know what to say. That is the birth that is there. And that is also what will die or fade. And you may find that it's much easier to see the birth, to see when you're in the middle of this state of mind. Because if you notice, as soon as you notice it, you're no longer unconscious to it. It already starts to shift. It already starts to fade. And then another one comes up. So we often find that we kind of fall asleep, you know, lose our sense of attention, and another birth comes up. But by bringing your attention to it, you can start to see those arise one after another. And a good hint for this process, both on the dyad and also just in general, is to start to shift into using verbs to describe these birth things. So it's like that, not the sense of self, it's the self thing. So let's say I'm worried, I'm thinking about all the details of something I have to do tomorrow. Worrying can be enough of a note, enough of a landmark to really lay it out or to explain that. You know, or planning. Don't have to worry about the details of plan. Try to notice that sense of you who is the planner, who is doing the planning. All right, so let's just sit quietly for a moment or two, letting those words settle. All right, so now we'll shift into some breakout rooms. All right, good, everyone's back. So apologize for some of the unclarity with instructions around the second question. And often we like to try to make the second question more of a surprise. But there's also some issues with the question going by too quickly. So that's part of the technology, the dukkha of technology. But my question is, did you notice that sense of self that arose with that? Do you notice that state of birth in that frustration or confusion? And we're able to see when it passed. So we have some chance now for any, you know, the large group questions, comments, or sharing. And so you have the power to unmute yourself. You're welcome to to do that. Either raise your hand or you can just unmute. I may not see your hand, but if you do the little blue hand, I'll be able to see that easier than your real hand. I'm curious to see if that dyad made any sense. It's definitely subtle and perhaps a little hard to get a sense of. But hopefully you're able to. Okay, David, go ahead.
I think the first part, it was a little easier to figure out what was coming into being rather than dying. And then the second one was maybe a little easier for me to connect with in general, just the things that were more consistent, whether they arose, like just the parts of like awareness and stuff that was just steady, right? I feel like I had more access to, or have more access to generally.
Yes. Yeah. Good. And I think that's very common. Like during the meditation, I was trying to do this dyad myself and noticing when the births happened and when they passed away. And it was much easier to realize when I was in kind of a mind state or in a thought process. But often the next one would just kind of wash over it. And wouldn't see the fact that that first one ended. But as I started to practice with it, I could see that it would arise. And as it arose, that very seeing of it started to lose its energy. It started to lose its investment. And so it was more of a quieter passing away of that. And then the sense of the what is outside of that conditioned, what is outside of the birthing and dying, the rising and passing away, and seeing what is consistent. I think it's also helpful to notice how that is actually always there. It's always in the background. And we often just kind of get so distracted by what's arising and passing away that we don't notice it. But it's so helpful just to say, okay, just to let everything quiet for a moment and let that reveal itself and to see how accessible and immediate it actually is.
Yeah, thank you. That's good.
Thank you, David. All right, Leslie.
Well, when I was working with my partner, Ken, on the first questions, one of the things that I have been experiencing a lot is just physical discomfort, restlessness. And so that was part of what I identified as arising. And it wasn't until the second question, and I was really enjoying more and more talking with Ken, that I felt myself relaxing and the restlessness and the physical discomforts had gone away. And I didn't even notice that they'd gone away until I went, oh, that was something arising earlier and now it's gone. I don't know when it went away, but it did.
You think it was the fact that things, they weren't arising, or just your relationship to them was different? Because often the content of our lives, especially something that's painful, like the physical discomfort, it brings our energy right to it, brings our attention right to it. And with that attention comes the sense of me who's having a relationship with it, or it's having a relationship with us. It's like we've created this sense of self around this difficulty. And yet, even in the midst of that, that's really our normal way of relating to life, both the pains and the pleasures. And yet, when we allow that to fall, when we shift our attention to what's not changing, then that relationship changes.
Indeed. And sometimes that comes from being distracted. My focus is just somewhere else in the world. And sometimes it's because my attention is focused, because that's what I'm concentrating on. But I'm not concentrating on the pain, my pain in my body and how I feel. My focus is just elsewhere.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that sense of personalization and making it me, I, me, and mine has the capacity to add a level of suffering and resistance to something. And yeah, so thank you for sharing that, Leslie. All right, who else would like to share anything? And remember, if you're waving your hand on the screen, Joyce, go ahead, Joyce, but I may not catch you because I can only see about a third of you at a time. Go ahead, Joyce.
I was just noticing that during the first question, I was focusing on the objects, the thoughts, the pain in my body, the emotions, and so it was one, it was something after another that was passing through and being born and dying and myself with it. And then in the second question, I noticed that I was focusing on the spaces between the objects, between the thoughts, on the silence that was interrupted by thoughts or a sound or something that would come in. But what I was seeing as more continuous was the space between those objects.
Beautiful. Yeah, that's exactly what we were hoping would arise with that. What was that experience like when you were noticing the objects and noticing the birthing and dying with those?
It was busy. It was kind of one thing after another, and I felt some energy with each arising, different kind of energy, whether it was a thought or a feeling. And so that energy I'm interpreting as the selfing, I guess.
Yes, yeah, exactly. The selfing, that kind of the momentum to engage, to do something with. And that also is dukkha. That is a more direct experience of dukkha, is that when we're always kind of doing something with, you know, whether it's thinking or feeling or reacting, there's a level of dukkha with that experience. And how that's part of this whole year-long expiration of dependent origination is how that really engages in different ways through how we see something and make a label for it, how our memory comes up around it, how our liking or disliking kind of drives this whole cycle. And it has a restless quality. It has this quality of unceasingness. It's like this is always churned up, like taking a glass with mud in it and shaking it, so it's always suspended. And then what was the experience like with the second question?
It was definitely calm, peaceful. In fact, it was like relief, relax, a plain, and just like a watcher kind of
Yes, and that's, you know, the Four Noble Truths, you know, the dukkha, the origination of dukkha, and there's a cessation, the nibbana, the cooling of that. And you can see how that's such a beautiful description of it is because there's this way that churning settles out, and they're just the calmness, they're just the peace, they're just the ease, you know, and that's the blowing out of that fire that keeps us going. And so seeing that, getting a taste of that, that's really showing us this whole process of dependent origination. So thank you, Joyce. All right, Barbara, you like to go next?
Yeah, actually, what Joyce said sort of reminded me of the second part. What came up for me was this place of witnessing. So that it was just like I was witnessing, and it became almost irrelevant whether something was in my body or outside my body. It was just a witnessing. And so like the boundary of my body, I mean, it didn't fully disappear, but it thinned.
Yes.
So that like I could feel warmth or I could hear sound, and both of them were just from a place of witnessing. And I didn't name, oh, this warmth is in my body, the sound is outside my body. It was just a place of witnessing. So that was the term that came up, was it wasn't awareness, it was just witnessing.
Yeah, beautiful. that sense of witnessing is like when we're not engaged in always interacting with the objects, there is just this sense of knowing, the sense of something which knows. That's something of witnessing. And that is something that is not changing. You know, it is something that it's always available. And you can see that the availability and the ease with whatever objects arise.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's so helpful to get a really good sense of this. And at some point we might say, okay, that's it. That's all I have to do. But eventually we have to bring those objects back in. So we hold them both with that perspective that it doesn't really matter. Like you said, sounds outside or inside, whatever is, it doesn't matter if it's internal or external. That's the absolute holding experience. And then there's the relative, well, that sounds like a smoke alarm. Maybe I should do something about it. And so then it starts to, you know, it's this interesting process how they come back together. So thank you for sharing that, Barbara.
Thanks. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, so I'm going by the blue hands, and so I apologize if you're waving your real hand and I'm not seeing it. So, Iris?
Thank you, Tim. And this might not be very organized, but just thinking about, there were three in my group, so there was a little more interpersonal contact. Just sort of having to speak about this stuff and respond. Like that felt like by definition that I'm birthing myself. And I mean, that didn't occur to me until after the exercise. Yeah, I think that's all. I can't figure out any other words to say right now.
Well, that sounds like that's a clear description of that, you know, that sense of stepping back enough to see that process of birthing, you know, of, okay, how am I going to navigate these relationships or this communication? And sometimes in the midst of it, it's hard to have that perspective. And so I think it's actually fine and helpful to have that stepping back and noticing, oh, wow, I really took birth in that. It's almost like after that sense of birth has faded into death and into emptiness, you can see, oh, wow, I was really into that. That was really going on. Whether it's something that's fairly, you know, low charge or something that's much more intense. And that helps us to see that next step is how that recycles into ignorance. By seeing, oh, wow, I was born, that actually starts to loosen the ignorance. It starts to see, oh, maybe I can recognize that more clearly next time it arises.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there were some pretty uncomfortable feelings in my body. I mean, when I say pretty uncomfortable, you know, on the very mild end of discomfort.
Yeah.
And I mean, I noticed it and I felt it and I saw it and I held it. They didn't really go away. So, I mean, that was fine. I didn't try and, I kind of would have liked them to have gone away, but I didn't try and push them away. They just stayed. So, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, seeing, you know, feeling that uneasiness or that discomfort in the body, you know, it's like with, I think with Joyce's or Barbara's question, recognizing that as dukkha. That there actually is suffering. There's actually an agitation there. And I mean, that's the Four Noble Truths start there, is like to actually notice that there is dukkha. There is actually this unsatisfactoriness and really taking that in and also taking in when that falls away, the absence of that.
Thank you for that reminder to really take it in. Because I was trying to say, oh, yeah, I mean, I recognize dukkha all the darn time. But it's possible that maybe I go a little too fast and don't give it its due. Like, like not dwelling necessarily, but just like really taking the time to feel it.
Yes, yeah, taking the time to feel it, because you have this, you know, you and all of us have this tremendous power of tanha, of becoming. There's a strong hunger to be or not to be, you know, in a state of positive mind or a state of negative mind is both that hunger to become. And to overcome that, we often need to really feel the dukkha, to really take it in, and not just, okay, that's suffering, but to take it in on a very immediate cellular level. And then it starts to be like, you know, why do I form into that sense of self? If that keeps happening, there's a way that that momentum of tanha is stronger than our realization of the dukkha. What we get out of becoming is greater than what we get out of seeing the dukkha and then releasing that tanha. So it's not a small thing.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, we could do a whole year on exploring dukkha, but probably people will get a little burned out by that. All right, what else is out there? Hello, someone's...
Can you hear me, Tim?
Yes, Rob, go ahead.
So it's kind of a question. I don't know if I'm going to be able to really say it very well, but I kind of found myself, you know, there's a lot of like thinking out loud, you know, and so it was a lot of sort of, oh, I'm seeing a sense of self around... anxiety around this question, or I'm seeing discomfort, or I'm worried about, you know, am I a good meditator? Am I getting this question? You know, there was a whole bunch of stuff arising around, you know, just sort of, am I getting the question right? You know, and then as I talked myself through that, it just sort of fell away. Hmm. You know, it was almost like I was soothing myself, or, you know, it's like I was taking the time because of this exercise to, you know, really feel what I was feeling and to verbally express that. And that sort of had the effect of, you know, then I started seeing it dying away. And instead of saying like, oh, I'm worried about this question, I started saying things like, I don't really care about, you know, I don't really care about the discomfort or I care less, you know. Basically, it was sort of a process where I saw the stuff arise, and then by sort of being with it, it sort of went away.
Yes.
Which was really kind of nice. And then I was thinking about, you know, like in real life, I often don't have the, I mean, maybe I should take more time to just stop and say like, oh, I'm really feeling kind of uncomfortable with this right now. But, you know, that doesn't, I don't quite know how to do that.
Well, first of all, just having a taste of that, having a sense of that is so helpful. And I want to kind of reframe it for a second. So it's, you know, the soothing is more of a effect. It's not actually what you are doing. And what was happening is that usually when we have a mind state, a lot of self-talk, like I'm worried about what I'm going to say, all those things, there's no separation between the content of our mind and us. Like we're just enmeshed in it. They're just us having the thought, us having the worry, us having the anxiety. Now, stepping back, what's just happening is you're kind of breaking or interrupting that unconscious assumption of of reality. There's only the sense of self who's having this experience. To actually realize that, there is these two things. There's a sense of you who's having an experience. It's not just the truth. When you're not doing that, we're just in the middle of the experience. That is literally our world. Our whole world is that worry. Our whole world is that anxiety. Our whole world is that fantasy. But to step back enough to say, oh, I'm having this experience, suddenly you're starting to go more into the objective, having into that sense of bringing wisdom to bear to that experience. And so it's actually a very significant thing to be able to do, to actually observe the mind and to even more recognize that's a sense of me who's arising with that. And so how to do that in the, I wouldn't say it's the real life, but maybe the fast-paced life, is to have a sense of, you know, practicing when things are slower, like when you're meditating, when you're just like in a board meeting or in a, you know, one of our groups, that when that arises, you just, oh, I'm having that experience, and to acknowledge that. And the more you're able to do that, you start to get that flavor of when you're in that engagement of self and how the dukkha arises with that, versus when you're saying, oh, this is a mind state that's arising and a sense of self arising. You can do that more and more quickly. It's like the mind can recognize path of suffering, of selfing, of identification, path of release of that into what's unchanging. And then that starts to be you just notice it, and then you start to, that starts to arise more spontaneously. You give your attention more to the what is not changing, into that sense of knowing itself versus the content. And then the nice thing is your content, you can actually function with it much more easily, have more spontaneity in action and response.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. All right. Kathy's had her blue hand up. So let's do that. This would be the last question. So Kathy, you're welcome to unmute.
Yeah. Thank you, Tim. You sort of answered it just with the things Rob brought up, but I was so appreciative as I reflecting on it a little bit that you mentioned right away when some of us didn't feel like we'd read the second question in time. What came up instantly? And I realized what came up instantly for me was, oh no, I'm missing out. I'm not gonna get it right. It happened in a less than a nanosecond. There I am in some kind of moderately intense momentary frustration that just, it's so quick. So I guess that maybe you could say something about that, maybe about practicing with that by picking slower transitions or any further suggestions you have, Tim.
Sure. Yeah. It is a process that happens in microseconds, as you said, nanoseconds. And that's what's this reflecting on this whole year we've spent, you know, 9 or 11 months exploring something that happens in nanoseconds, you know, and to try to bring a little bit more consciousness to it. But, you know, I think one of the most important things is just as you talk about it, how you noticed, you know, what came up for you when you had that difficulty, and you were kind of laughing at yourself. You're taking, you know, there's a sense of humor with that. And the more you can bring that in, the lighter this whole thing can be. Because otherwise we think, oh no, there I am, forming my another sense of self again. What am I going to do? I've been practicing for all these years. And we've just created another sense of self that's reacting to this sense of self we've already had. But when we start to laugh at it and say, oh wow, you know, this process just kind of churns away. That attitude of lightheartedness, of humor, of not taking it so personally, I think really starts to have a buoyancy that really bubbles through our practice. And just to say, oh wow, that's just happened. And just wherever you catch it, you know, wherever you catch it, whenever you have the opportunity, you can do it. You know, it's hard to catch it right in the middle of it. if you're kind of churning in a mind state, and you're just anxious and worried or fantasy, then you can often kind of, oh, wow, because the suffering kind of finally gets through to you. This is really not a fun experience. You can step back and realize, oh, there's a sense of self that's here. And sometimes you do it after the fact. You realize, oh, wow, I was really caught in that. And I acted in that way. I stated my opinion as being absolute truth. And I realized that was just the sense of self being invested in. That was the world that I created. And that's how I acted from that world. And so then what you're reflecting on it that way, you start to catch it when it's arising. And there may be many times that we'll forget, that we won't see that. But there will be also more and more times that we see it until there you start to have a deeper, your heart starts to yearn and align more and more with that stillness, more and more to what is not changing. Because that's where the peace lies. That's outside of the conditions, outside of the objects. No matter what's arising, there's that peace that's available. So thank you, Kathy, and thank everyone. Just a quick moment before you leave. This is a bit time sensitive that I just put it in the chat, that Rodney Smith, you know, their beloved founder of SIMS, is doing a book club. And so this is through IMS. And so there's one starting, I think, on the 2nd or something, coming up pretty soon here. But I just sent a link to that. And that is a chance to, you can post some questions and he'll answer that in a way of exploring his book and having some interaction with Rodney. So if you're interested, there's that link. And Philip Moffitt's retreat's coming up in, not this weekend, but next week. And you know, consider attending. It's going to be, a great retreat. And then Rodney's coming back at the end of January for a non-residential, all on Zoom until we figure out this COVID. All right, thank you again for all your sincerity. And next week we'll have a talk. And I think it's going to be on just a summary of dependent origination and how kind of bringing it all together, if I don't change my mind. Okay.